Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You Show. We have a really cool guest with us today. We have Julie Rupert. She is the commissioner of the Northeast 10 Conference. And this one of those moments where I'm just going to be like, hi, Julie. Hi, Julie. So cool you're here.
Hi. Well, I'm honored to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. This is really meaningful and a really big moment. My heart's beating a little bit faster because you're here. And how cool is that? I have goosebumps saying this. You're the first female commissioner in the division. Wow. I just want to go right there and ask you right off the bat, like, what was that moment like when you found out you received this position or earned this position, however you phrase that in sports? What did they do? How did they tell you that? And what was your response? I just want to go there. Is that okay?
Of course. So cool. And thank you so much for this opportunity. I think if you know this, being a woman in an industry that is not where you see the people, women in those types of positions of leadership, when you get there, you look around and you're like, wow. But I think the climb and what you do and the hours that you put into it to get there and the people you know you impacted and influenced and impressed, I think for me that moment was I know I can do this job, so they made the right choice. And I don't mean that to sound overly confident, but it was like I earned this opportunity, and I know that I can do a really good job on behalf of, this fantastic collection of institutions, and I was ready for it. So first, I was the only for a little while, and now I'm proud to say there's four of us of 23 conferences in Division II and more even growing in the ranks in Division I and Division III. So it's a close-knit community. We take care of each other. We support each other. We lift each other. And I think that across all professions, you need to do that.
Yeah. My mom always said, you can do anything you put your heart and mind to. Follow your passion.
Yeah. It's so true. And you don't know where that path is going to take you. And, I think growing up, I would never have thought that this is a path. But in the end, it was, my kids are, my kids think that I, go to meetings and go to games. It's like it is
course,
who I
right.
am, right? So
yeah.
It's only impressive to the people that you work with, I suppose. Everybody else gets grounded.
Universal truth. You get a famous actor on and they're like, I'm Will Ferrell and my kids, whatever. I get it. It's hysterical. They're just used to you. But let's talk about those kids for a minute, because not only, do you have this amazing role at work, but you're a mom of twins. And I just had a mom, I connected you kind of on Twitter. I just had another mom, Fran Petrie. She is the mom of three sets of twins. Can you imagine that?
No, God bless her.
I've got four boys over here, and I'm like, four, three sets of twins.
Oh, yes. Oh, same to you. I look at having twins. I mean, I had an incredibly supportive work environment when they were born in 2004. And I look now, they're 15, they're heading into their sophomore year of high school, and I think, boy, the tunnel, they're almost there in terms of independence and, close to driving, which is a whole nother story. But, and I think, the lessons, my husband works in intercollegiate athletics as well, and I feel like we've always tried to give them, provide them an environment where they saw the importance of, education and sports and teamwork and all the things that we say we do on a daily basis in our work lives, you know, they get to see a little combination from the other side. And having a boy and a girl, I think has been, you know, so great, because you get to see
both.
You know, both genders, how they're socialized, and how the importance of just doing what we do, no matter what job it is, just importance of showing, you know, our kids that what we all do matters. And, you know, they have grown up around athletics, you know, more so with the Bryant University campus, and what a great, you know, family environment that is for and has been for us for over 22 years now. But, you know, they grew up thinking that the long jump pit was their sandbox, for goodness sake. So, you know, it's like things like that
yeah.
that are, you know, that are important. And so it's been great.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a few more questions just about you, because mm-hmm. I think this is super cool. Middlebury College, that is
yes.
one of the best schools, you know. Oh my gosh, you're a graduate of Middlebury College. That's a high SAT score there, Julie.
Yeah. Well,
just teasing. That's a great school.
Yeah. I loved it. I grew up in Middlebury, so I'm a small town Vermont, you know, and I had exposure to the college and the community, you know, obviously
yeah.
very early on. And, you know, it's a lot of the reason I am who I am. And I am thankful every day for, I think, the small town environment of growing up where I grew up, and then attending a school like Middlebury, which, you know, one of my big mantras here is what higher education provides, you know, the opportunities that it provides, the doors that it opens, the paths that it paves. And for me, Middlebury was one of those paths and provided me with that foundation, and I'll be forever grateful.
So one of the things that I really love about you is that you have experience, whether attending or, you know, being in a role, a leadership role, you have experience with all divisions.
Yes.
Because Middlebury's
yes.
D3, then you did D1 with the America East Conference, and now this is D2. And I have this little saying, like D2, the porridge is just right. It's like, yeah, I always
yeah.
say that in my head. Can you do us a kind favor, and I've had coaches do this before, but I would love to have your take on this, but can you explain the differences between the divisions? You know, just go into a little bit of detail. And that is also for the benefit of younger viewers that we have, because often when we have people like you on the show, we have people who are looking at this from athletics, a career of their own, a female
sure.
that wants to follow in your footsteps, so many different angles on that, but be quiet.
Yeah. So I think I've been incredibly fortunate to have that exposure. You know, what I tell people is find the right fit. Don't worry about, you know, that somehow, two is a different number than one or three. Find the right fit for you, for your major, for the environment, for the culture at the school. From an athletic standpoint, the quick and easy is, of course, that Division I tends to be higher resourced in many instances around athletic scholarships, and Division III, of course, offers no athletically related aid. If you're going to a Division III institution, you're going because your background academically, your profile, and your athletic your desire to participate in athletics as an extracurricular or co-curricular activity is such that, you know, that's a good fit for you. So financial aid and obviously grants and loans would help you fulfill the cost of that education. I couldn't agree with you more. I love the way you just said it in terms of the porridge is just right. I think Division II is a perfect blend of that, of those two models. I think it is athletics. I like to tell people it's athletics in all the right proportions. And
yeah.
so it doesn't mean that it's, you know, that they're spending somehow less, or you're not getting that high level competitive opportunity, because in Division II,
oh.
I think that I would put our programs up against many Division I programs in terms of the high quality and caliber of the athlete that they're recruiting. Excuse me. And I think that Division II just sort of has it in scale, that this is, you know, we like to say in Division II it's life in the balance. If your institution has study abroad programs, or if you want to be a theater major or nursing major, and you know, you may not be able to pursue those avenues in Division I because of the time commitment, you can do that in Division II. And then, of course, from a financial standpoint, this notion of partial scholarships, where, you know, there's very, very few student athletes within Division II that are going and having a full ride, that there's a combination of athletic aid and merit money and academic money that allow you and your family to find that right point for you, for, you know, obviously affordability and value is so important today. And so I think that this, you know, I know I've now spent a lot of time in all three, and I wouldn't trade what I've learned about Division II and who we are for anything.
Yeah. So that's a great explanation. Thank you for that. And bless you. It's going
Thank
around.
You.
It's
no,
like
I
allergies
have a little bit of a
and cold. Colds.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Thank you for being on here, even with the cold. I have had my share of sneezing and coughing live on air as well. Everybody knows it.
I apologize. I'm trying to drink some water so I can.
That's what I do too. Yeah. No, it's okay. It's all good. And we love you. Can you talk about the Northeast 10 and the conference, what schools are in it and what it is? Because I had so much fun watching that branding shift over to NE10 Embrace. I watched it as it happened, because I'm like a branding nerd. I just love branding and marketing and everything. And I just watched it unfold. I'm like, oh, that's genius. Who's behind that? And it took a little digging. I'm like, oh, I found her. And the crew and everybody. Love that.
Well, thank you. You know, we partnered with a fantastic branding firm out of New York City, and I think the impetus and the momentum behind it was that, to your earlier question about the differences in Division II, we wanted to find a way to convey the distinctiveness of our model. You know, we're in a region of the country that is obviously progressive and innovative and keyed into higher education. And so within that framework of the crowded landscape of the Division IIIs that are around us and the myriad Division I conferences that have touch points into New England, how did we, as the only New England-based or Northeast-based Division II conference, tell our story, make ourselves distinctive enough to both, you know, that 18-year-old that's trying to decide where to go to college, and their parents, and to convey that nothing had to be compromised within their choices. And so we knew what we had, which is a collection of fine institutions that were diverse in their composition. So diverse in that if you want to be a philosophy major at a small rural school, you can. If you wanted to be a business major at a very urban campus, you can. If you wanted to go to a larger school, you can, or small. And so what we wanted to convey is that you can embrace whatever it is that you wanted to seek out of your college education, and you'd find it in the NE10. And so, you know, we went down this path of really defining who we are and what it meant to be able to compete at the highest levels athletically, but to proudly put out there the high level of academics, which is, you know, tops in the division and tops in Division II across the board, no matter the sport. And so we wanted to, boldly and proudly, you know, tell people who we were, and that was behind this, that we embraced the excellence, you know, which our institutions were, you know, what they're built on. And so this branding campaign was the first step and a very exciting and bold step for us. We created some materials that told our story, that allowed our institutions and our coaches to help tell the story, so that they're, when they're in the living rooms, they're understanding that they're selling their institution, they're selling futures, you know, to, because it's not, it's about what happens after these 4 years. And, you know, we've really honed in on our mission, which is to, you know, we want to provide these student athletes with exceptional educational opportunities, and do it while competing in high-level athletic competition, and know that they're going to grow as people when they're on our campuses. And, you know, what more can we do? What better can we do than to do that?
Well, one of the things that I deeply appreciate that I find that the Northeast 10 Conference instills in athletes, and really any lives that you, that any of those athletes touch, because it's not just the athletes. It's, I mean, the athletes, you know, they touch, you know, the other people's lives on campus regularly. Yeah. And there's such a force of community minded athleticism going on. Do you want to talk on that? Because this isn't just sports in school. There's like another layer added where the student athletes are so mindful of each other and community.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. It blows me away.
Yeah. You know, I would say that, especially now in this culture, you know, we, whether you're a leader in the entertainment industry or the sports industry or higher education or business, I mean, we all need to be prepared to, you know, serve, in this diverse, you know, society. And, being a member of a community, you know, I think college, it provides that opportunity, really, you know, sometimes for the first time. I think high schoolers are community members, but I think you're part of a town or a city, but when you get to a campus, I think, you know, for many of these young people, it's being part of a community for the first time. And I think for student athletes, they're wearing the name of that school on their jersey. And I think they learn very quickly what it means to represent. And then I think from that, you become part of that whole student athlete community. And, you know, we need to be building leaders who are committed to that lifelong community engagement, because if you can't be engaged with your campus community, then how can we expect that you'll be engaged, you know, beyond the walls of academia once you graduate? And so I think, you know, the student athletes, they get each other, you know, they understand the commitment level it takes. They understand what it means to be a student and an athlete and the balance. And so, yeah. Excuse me, I think that there's mutual respect there. And, you know, we look at these, you know, often, you've been to enough sporting events that it's beyond parents and family that are at these games. It's fellow student athletes. And those are the things that make you proud, right? That you're, you know, the students understand and they come out and support you, and then you support them in return.
Yeah. And I've seen little kids go up to your athletes for ask for autographs or pictures or a moment or anything. And it's conducted at such a pro level. It almost feel like you have pro athletes right there. You know, their mindsets are pro.
Yeah. You know, they say the saying, and you see it, you hear presidents say it all the time, you know, athletics is the front porch of our campus. And it is the front porch. It's the living room. It's the backyard, right? It needs to be the place where you engage, that you create that spark in a young boy or girl who's on that campus and sees that, you know, these role models, you know, both young men and young women, and that, you know, that they're pursuing, you know, their dreams. And, you know, I think, short of just what's on television these days, I think, you know, those kids looking up to that student athlete knows no division, you know, no boundaries by division. You know, for them, that is a baseball student athlete, and it doesn't matter that it's at, you know, Middlebury or the University of New Haven or the University of Maine. You know, that's a role model. And I think that's what athletics, intercollegiate athletics, can do, and I think it's great.
Yeah. If I won the lotto, I always say, you know, I'd put lights at every single stadium and every single sport in the Northeast 10.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Just lights. I know. I had all the turf lights, you know, everything. It's just my little thing. If I ever have that much money, that's what I'm going to do. If you don't do it already. If you won the lottery, what would you do?
Well, it's funny. I've thought about that. You know, it's like, what would you do to improve the lives of others? Now, put aside that I'd probably, you know, obviously do something special for my, you know, like, but I look around and I say, if only, right? If only there was turf baseball fields at every field. If only there was, expanded, health and safety access. If only there was lights, to your point. I mean, I think about that just in terms of what those things do. And I know that sounds sort of, you know, like, wow, she'd look to do that. But what a difference. You know, you look around at the campuses that have some of those things and you say, you know, again, it's just about the money, right? It's just, that's the difference right there is, you know, somewhere
sure.
along the way. Because it's not about priorities. It's just about, you know, everything costs money, and it's an interesting thing. So I look around. If you're asking about what I would do, like, to on the behalf of our,
it was just a fun question. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just great, right? You do that. You'd say, boy, how could I make a difference? Full-time coaches, right? Like, how could you ensure that when every kid went to college and played a sport that they had access to their coaches, because coaches are like the biggest, source of guidance and advice. And, you know, I'm all for providing, that access and opportunity to that. So those are all the things that I do on the sort of on that side. And I'm sure I'd love to, on the fun side, I'd buy houses and flip them. That's mine and my husband's like someday dream, right?
Yeah. I think mine's shoes. I'm just a shoe hound. I buy a lot of shoes.
So am I. We have that in common. That's awesome.
Yeah, 7.5. When one of my kids has a birthday, I'm like, wouldn't it be great if you got ladies size 7.5 shoes for me? You know, it's like,
you'll love those terrible. Very specific hints,
yeah,
right?
They look at me like, no, Mom, Legos are good. Well, they're past Legos now, but anyway. Okay, so thank you for having a good sense of humor with my silly
sure.
questions. But I love your Twitter feed. And, you know, you earned commish. I mean, I love it. NE10 _ commish. That's awesome.
Yep.
Do you like, what's your favorite method of social media? Do you like people contacting you on Twitter? Do you like Facebook? Do you follow, you know, do you like social media?
Yeah, I do. I do. I use it. I say to people, I use it as an information gathering source, and I need to take the time to put myself more out there from the messaging. So that's on, you know, sort of on my own personal goals, because I do think it's such a powerful tool. My kids tell me that Facebook is Instagram for old people. So,
yep,
you know,
accurate.
I'm still Facebook. I'm not on Instagram, but I know that our metrics show that I should be. So it's Twitter for me seems to be that connector. For me, Facebook is more on the personal side, other than supporting, you know, our institutions' Facebook pages. For me, the interaction and the knowledge is on Twitter, and I think our schools and our industry, you know, I think Twitter was the perfect platform for sports because it gave real-time information in a way that, quite honestly, was a real game changer for, I think, the Division IIs and the IIIs and the programs that weren't on television, right? Back in the day, which isn't that long ago, you used to wait till, you had to sit in front of your television and watch the ticker go by to find out how somebody did. And so to have that type of immediate access has really changed the connection points for our teams and our institutions in a way that, goodness, none of us could have envisioned, right? And so I look at how the platform for Twitter, news and sports, I mean, it's really allowed you to be able to convey those messages and real-time information about who you are, and I think that's great.
Yeah, the use of hashtags is very important. It's not only super important to have your own hashtag, like NE10Embrace, but also to hashtag each post larger. So like college sports so that people, because otherwise the general public doesn't know sometimes to search for NE10Embrace. So it's a smaller community.
Right.
But like with each post, if you hashtag it, ESPN or college sports or, whatever it is, then a larger a larger community can find those posts, especially if it's like post sports specific, like hashtag college football or hashtag college baseball or whatever. So it's really interesting. I think the I love your use of social media.
Thank you. And I think that, when we came up with that, we embrace the right way, and that's not to be judgmental, but we embrace sort of doing college athletics the right way, that's or in our own way. I think, we embrace everything it means to be, successful and excellent. And, hashtags can really go a long way in conveying your brand and who you are in a very authentic way.
Yeah, it's like a Google search on Twitter. But the nice thing about hashtags is that they've gotten universal on all the different social media formats. So whether you hashtag it on, the use of hashtags on Facebook is the same use as Twitter or whatever. But I love the point you made that basically old people are on Facebook. Yeah, I got it. I love it when my kids say that. I'm like, I am not old. 50 is not old. But yeah, it is a little older.
Young heart.
Exactly. They're on Instagram, and then the other big one is Snapchat. Now, I don't know, Julie Rupert, the commissioner of the Northeast 10 on Snapchat with bunny ears, giving the message. I'm not certain that's good. With rabbit whiskers, or you've changed your voice, or whatever. The use of Snapchat is, how do you even go about using Snapchat as an institution to reach all those people? Because that's really where they live. All the college age kids and younger kids are on Snapchat.
And
how do you use
that? My kids are 15, and sometimes, you hear, if you're not on Snapchat, you have to be. You also have just to figure out what's happening in your kids' lives. And I think, we've sort of taken the tactic. We hope that we've done right by them and given them the right lessons, because I'm not on Snapchat, right? And I don't need to be monitoring 24/7. I need to make sure that what they're doing and is healthy and safe. But at the same time, there's a level of how much is too much for us? And as a leader in this field, I think we find the platforms that help us and that we're comfortable with. That doesn't mean we can afford to be sort of staid and sort of like living in just the Facebook. And I think our staff does a fantastic job with Instagram. That's our largest growing community, is on the social media perspective. Snapchat's been a little bit harder, I think, to get our arms around what that means. And maybe that's just as simple as the filters or the, I think we have to keep moving with the times, but the next thing's going to be around the corner, and pretty soon for the kids that are probably in the 10 to 12 year old range, there's going to be something different by the time they're 15. And so, I'd like to think that we're staying relevant and we have people in the positions that we do that are maintaining our accounts, that are staying fresh on those, and they'll take us old people along with them, I suppose.
I had two of my kids we were just out at Wendy's, they were grabbing something to eat, and And they're like, Mom, you need to be on Snapchat. I'm like, I really don't. I don't even know what that is. And they're like, here, let me have your phone. I'll show you. And they turned me into like a troll. And it was absolutely hilarious. I mean, it's good for humor, but I can't figure out its use in like communicating, like, you know, how your team did. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, like that quick picture with your tongue sticking out somehow supposed to be meaningful to the person that receives it. Right. Like I have no idea. And I make no secret of that with my kids. I'm like, I don't understand what that just conveyed, you know, and they're like, so it is what it is. It is funny though. Their frame of reference is, you know, my son said something the other day about needing to, you know, a map and getting his, you know, figuring out like where we were. And he's like, well, I'll just check Snap. And, you know, he looks and he sees and he's like, look, this is us and this is where this is. And I was like, well, I suppose if the end result is the same, you're just, you know, it's not the old days of pulling out the Rand McNally Atlas, but hey.
Yeah, they got Snap location on. You know, one more kid story. Oh, what'd you say? Yeah, isn't it cool, though? It's kind of neat. It's like, oh, Snap. Yeah, they can tell where their friends are and all this stuff. I'm like, all right. One more kid story. Yeah, yesterday we're upgrading my desktop and laptop and webcam and all this stuff, and my kids are like, Mom, have you ever seen this? I'm like, probably. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. Chances are, like, it's a keyboard. Look at this. And they put a keyboard. They put a keyboard in front of me. And they're like, I know you use a laptop, but have you ever seen a keyboard? I'm like, about 25 years ago. So everything old is new again. The concept of a keyboard was novel. I'm like, oh, man.
I know. You know, the typing class, right? The kids type with their thumbs and they're really fast at it. But, you know, back in the day, we used to take like typing.
Yeah, I said that. I'm like, this is what I didn't even use.
Yeah.
The typewriter. I don't know. I'm 50. I mean, we actually had a typing class
in 50.
High school. That was
I just turned 50.
On a typewriter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean, though? It was the typewriter.
Yeah.
It was a piece of paper that fed through it. And if you made a mistake, you were typing over or whiteout.
Yeah.
The concept
of memory typewriters where you just could, type along and then you'd press it and then do with the whole page.
Yeah. So anyway, so where I was going with that too is like Roku and all of these amazing ways that you can watch the NE10. Click and it's on.
So
cool.
So, you know, we've sort of done this strategically in that we developed our new brand. We launched a fantastic new strategic plan last year. And then also in November of last year, launched the NE10 Now, which is our digital network. And, you know, we talk about technology and improvements, but, you know, as much as social media has meant instant access, so too has the rise of digital, streaming. And, I'm just so impressed with the commitment that our institutions have made to support the immediacy of broadcasting all of our contests. You know, we eventually, by the end of next year, so by the end of the 2021 academic year, we'll be the only Division II conference that has all of our team sports streamed live. And so if you're the parent of a baseball student athlete or soccer or football or ice hockey, you know, or lacrosse, you are able to watch your son or daughter participate in home events. And we hope that, you know, eventually will, you know, obviously no matter where they are playing. But I think that's important. You know, life gets busy and people want to be able to, so, you know, they can't always travel and parents are both two-parent working families. And so we want to provide that opportunity, but it's also exposure for our programs and our institutions. And so, the rise of digital has been another one of those sort of important moments that we'll look back on and say the fact that the resources are now available and the costs are such that people can do this in a very high value production, you know, and I'd hold up several of our member institutions as doing so excellent. You know, they just produce these things. They take pride in their work. And it's great.
Yeah, their games are announced. There's sometimes two and three cameras. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, it's really, really well done. Have you had to do like TV, like, hey, everybody, you're on TV type of training, like to remind the coaches and the athletes and the fans and so forth that everything that they say can be heard on TV for the most part, or no? Do you go to those links to say, hey, you're on TV?
Yeah, you know, we haven't yet, although we do pass along sort of our expectations, and you hope that the schools do as well. You know, the play-by-play, especially in sports that haven't had it, is super important, and often the people that they're recruiting to do that have the knowledge base about the sports and the teams and the institutions in the NE10 are former student athletes, and I think not only, one, can that be a career launcher or a resume builder, but it also provides an opportunity for us to provide that knowledge to the viewing audience, but they have to be responsible and aware that they have that responsibility to the audience to keep it clean and keep it responsible and tell the story of what the viewers are seeing. And so we have long-term plans to begin to expand that programming. But often right now we're reliant on the athletic communication staff in our schools to do some of that for us. And I will say they do a really mm-hmm. good job. You know, I think we also have a responsibility, your point about coaches, to assist them in their development. You know, we talked about what it means for us to provide opportunities for student athletes as they come in as first-year students and graduate, at the end of those 4 years. We have the same. I find that another piece of what Division II is it's often giving, you know, head coaches their first head coaching job, right? And sometimes they haven't been assistants for very long. And so I think we have a responsibility to them as well to provide professional development opportunities and growth opportunities, leadership opportunities, so that, you know, they're not struggling to lead their team at the same time they're trying to, you know, grow themselves in that role as a head coach for the first time. And I think that's, we're similar to Division III in that respect. You know, Division I head coaches are coming in, they've probably been an assistant or associate head coach at other Division I programs, or maybe a Division II head coach that moves up, and I don't think it's quite the same as what we have to do here.
Yeah. Do you know all of the coaches personally? Like, are those people that you hired? This is going to be a really naive question, so correct me and all this stuff, because I was thinking of I don't know if you can do this or not, but the head coach of Bentley Baseball. It was really a
Bob
moment.
Police.
Oh, yeah. I loved being there. I was actually there for a game. Can you talk about him a little bit?
Sure.
Funny.
51 years, right? 51 years he's been coaching young men, and he's, you know, still has that sort of vigor and enthusiasm at the start of every season. It's pretty amazing to see. And to see I had the opportunity to be at an alumni event where, you know, so many of their former players came back, and they love him, you know, they revere him. And that's pretty cool, in terms of, because I imagine it's a challenge to connect to 18-year-olds, you know, when you're 51 years into, you know, coaching the sport of baseball. And so, but he's really down to earth. He loves the sport. He cares deeply about the sport and the young men that participate in it. So he's been a remarkable supporter of this conference, certainly. And if you ever need a history lesson, he will be the one to give it to you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think in that respect, he mentors the other coaches. You know, to your question about, we have about 270 head coaches in this league across our 24 sports. And so I'd like to say that I know most of them, probably give up one of my secrets. If I just call you coach, it probably means that I don't, you know, but it's great, because I'm a people person, and I think you connect best when you establish those kind of personal relationships and meaningful conversations and dialogue, so that you're not just showing up to watch a game and leaving. You know, there's I think that doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah, we're around a coach who it seems like he just super cares about the players' lives. You know, not just the sport part of it, but the actual life of the person beyond those 4 years by far.
Yeah, and that's I mean, as a parent, what more can you ask for, right? Like, I definitely look at this now through the lens of, you know, having seen so exposed to so many different programs on all different levels, you know, as my kids are in high school, you know, who would I want them to play for and learn from and be guided by, right? It's a really big thing. Like, it's a really awesome responsibility that they have. And I look at it and I see the approach and how much they care about the development of the person over those 4 years. And and I look at how
great
critical
word.
That role is. And and how important it is when people make these hires that they're hiring people for the right reasons. And that's why, you know, going back to it, that's why I love Division II, because I think these men and women that are heading up these programs really do have the best interests, the student-athletes' best interests at heart, you know, and they're committed. And I think you look around, as much as we have 270 head coaches, we have a lot that have given decades of their tenure. You know, I look at especially – in, you know, our team sports, you know, people that have probably had opportunities to move on or up and have chosen to really stay and continue to make a difference.
That's what I love.
And it's really great, you know.
Cool,
it's not about chasing the next job. It's really, if you find that right fit and
stay.
You know, stay.
Yep. I
make a difference.
There's so many ways to make a difference, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Can you talk, am I asking too many questions or are we all good? I keep
no,
asking,
we're all good.
I'm sorry, I have so many. We got you on the phone, it's exciting. I'm trying to contain my over-enthusiasm. can you talk about women in sports? Like, have you seen, you know, you've got a lot of years doing, you know, touching lives of people in sports. Do you see a rise in women's sports, and which ones? And you know, can you talk about that, or is it all sports? Or I don't know what I don't know. So
I think it's interesting. I am young enough that for me, opportunity was never, you know, the opportunity to play or compete. You know, I remember in high school there wasn't girls lacrosse or girls ice hockey, but, you know, there was never a question that if you wanted to play a sport, you could, and there was going to be opportunities. And I would say, you know, I've seen the growth of or the expansion of opportunities for girls over the last 25 years. I certainly think when I first started at America East and our offices were in Orono, Maine, and I was thinking about this over the last couple of weeks is I don't know if you remember, Kathy Ingles was the women's basketball coach at UVM, and you know, that first one of her she got started in coaching at UVM, and they went undefeated in a couple of seasons. And then, back then, there was no automatic qualification. So, you know, UVM women's basketball could go 32-0, and they had no access to the NCAA championship. And so I look at it and I think back that wasn't that long ago. And, you know, the great Joanne Palumbo McCauley days at UMaine basketball, I mean, it was a big deal when just access. And so I use that word a lot, you know, women, young girls and women having access to these opportunities is super important. And it sort of translates through all the different levels and divisions. And I think our schools care a lot about that. I think we've seen an expansion of opportunities, you know, even over the last 11 plus years that I've been here. We as a conference have, you know, added women's golf, and we've seen tremendous growth in women's lacrosse. That's probably men's and women's lacrosse because of what's happened at the high school level. You know, they're the two fastest growing team sports in the high school levels. In fact, it's it's all will be fully sponsored, and all of our institutions will have women's lacrosse beginning this year, which when I started, I think there was only maybe eight. So I think you've seen colleges look at opportunities for women's sports. At the same time, they've looked at their enrollment and know that in an awful lot of cases, women are enrolling at higher numbers than men. So not only is it adherence to federal law, but it's providing opportunities because it's the right thing, and there's interest because these girls are coming in playing youth sports and high school sports. I will tell you, I'm a proponent of not specializing. So I think it's important that there's opportunities at the college level, but I think it's equally important that girls have, opportunities to play whatever sports they want and not just one. It shouldn't be soccer 365. Sure. But I think that, I look around and I see the growth of women leaders in positions of, whether it's in athletics. We have 7 female presidents at our institutions, which I think is amazing, so.
That is.
Yeah, and so I think we've seen female athletic directors, and I think we'll see the day where there's a growth in females coaching men's sports. I think that we'll continue to see we need to continue to advocate for the girls and women that play the sports to consider coaching. I think we still have work to do in terms of what that means in terms of work life if there is ever such a thing as work life balance, right? How can you have it all? We've talked about all the things that we need from coaches in terms of guidance and access, but at the same time they have lives too. So that's an important thing. I think we have work to do there.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a boy question. And this is coming from Mama Four Boys viewpoint, and might have a little bit of an agenda with it. I don't know. Sorry. But so one of the things I noticed being a mama of four boys is that boys are sometimes pinpointed as trouble. Mm-hmm. And especially in a team or a group or, it just is. It just sort of maybe sometimes society and so forth. Lower GPA, just trouble sometimes. And my boys notice it too. And so the kids I have are straight A, basically kind of kids. They do sports. They do, they're high achieving souls who are community minded and so forth. But do you find that we fight that, especially in, team sports and things like that? Or is that anything that really actually happens?
Yeah.
I see it, but I don't know if it happens on larger levels and how you deal with it.
I guess I'd paint it in that it's not dissimilar to sort of painting all of college athletics with the same broad brush that, that you hear about the stories of the highest levels of Division I, and somehow that makes it somehow attributable to all intercollegiate athletics, right? So you hear about these stories, whether it's of excess or rule breakers or people accepting money or students have paying people to do their tests for them, and somehow that should be what that people believe that's their perception of what all of collegiate athletics is. And so I sometimes think that, that same thing happens to, if there's one particular story, somehow that becomes the story that people's, their lens is that must be what all, boys or all lacrosse teams or all, what you pick the sport, the culture. And so I think it's on all of us to continue to tell the stories of those young men, especially because I do think that there's a real role for them as ambassadors for society, that these are the people that are the role models, right? And this is the lens that you want to see student athletes or students and just boys through, because there's a lot more of the positive stories, and sometimes we give weight and a lot of air and energy to the bad, to the negative stuff. And I think that is, that fails all the 99% of those that do it, the, do things the right way. And so I think whether it's on campus engagement, we talked a little, you know, we talked earlier about community, you know, it's so important for male leaders and captains and team and teams and coaches to be visible on campus and to show that that's not the the brush they should be painted with. It sounds probably
well put.
Sounds easier than it is, right? But it's, it's important.
It's like leading by example or being the role model. So that's
it's okay to be sort of vulnerable. You know, that it's okay to be out there and doing the things that maybe aren't, someone would say, are, you know, traditionally male roles, whether that's fundraising or working on mental health initiatives or, you know, just even general wellness issues. You know, all those things that people would say, oh, well, that's, you know, not for the men's lacrosse team or the baseball team or the football team to be doing. I'll be like, you know what? No, yes, it is. It's exactly what they need to be doing.
I would totally agree. So that leads to a couple more things about, don't you have like a student athlete committee? And then also, don't you have like mental health wellness days? I don't know if that's specific to New Haven, but I thought I saw like a committee of student athletes or something, like leadership committees.
We do. We have a fantastic group called our Student Athlete Advisory Council. That is two student athletes from every one of our institutions. So it's 28 of our leaders. They are equally split between male and female, and they really provide us with that insight and guidance from, and perspective. You know, inclusion and diversity of thought is about the voices around the table. And so it's really important for, I think, athletic department leaders and intercollegiate athletics leaders to hear the perspective and the voice of the student athlete. And you see that, I think, at the highest levels nationally where, you know, they're engaged and they're attending meetings. And so for us, it's the same way. So we have two per school, and they set their priorities for each academic year. And, you know, they'll be working on mental health and wellness. It's such a critical, critical issue, and one that I really see athletics leading in terms of the impact it can have on campus, in terms of, you know, reducing the stigma around admitting that, you know, you don't have to be okay and that there's help and you're not alone. And so I think that mental health, and they're going to take on, you know, some other initiatives around, you know, inclusion.
I love that.
And so those will be priorities for that group, and then we'll work with them to identify, you know, whether that's outside speakers or, you know, theme, you know, days where we support the same initiative, weeks where we can focus in on all of our social media efforts around mental health. And So I think they play a huge role, and there's real leadership opportunities for those student athletes, and I think they can make a real difference. So that's, you know, so we have a conference student athlete advisory council. Every institution also has a student athlete advisory council, the composition of which will vary. Sometimes it's open to anybody who wants to participate. Sometimes it's a couple of representatives from each team, but it really provides some great structure. And then additionally, the NCAA has one as well. And so, you know, you really get a sense that their voice matters, and it does.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I quote you? Because that was beautiful what you just said. And you said, I want to make sure I get the quote right. I wrote it down as you were kind of saying it. You said inclusion and diversity of thought is what's needed at the table. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
That's great. I'm quoting you. Awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, we can only, I mean, how can we be successful as a society if we're not being inclusive and hearing all the voices, right? I mean, that's part of, I think, some of our trouble today is we don't stop and listen. And so, you know, for us, whether it's in our leadership group, that is the director of athletics, and we always have a female, the senior highest ranking female administrator from our institutions is around that table. We make the best decisions when we are open to hearing each other, and we're open to hearing, diversity of thought that may not match up to exactly what ours is. But in the end, I think we make better decisions because we've taken the time to listen. So, and that's the same whether that's at our athletic directors, whether that's at our student athlete level. Those are the groups that we can have a little bit more impact on. So I'm proud of that. I think that's important. It's how I got to where I am because I was around the table.
And it's like
how people get into any girl or boy wants to look around and say, if you see you can be you, right? That's the saying you hear a lot now. And it's important for women that are thinking about coaching or you look around youth sports. I still see even in our town, it's still a lot of dads coaching the girls soccer. So, I think from a young age, then they become the high schoolers that prefer coaches who are male, or the college athletes who've only been coached by males. So it's sort of like see and be seen, and you start to say, I can be her. I think that's important.
Yeah. We're going to run out of time, but I'm wondering, out of respect for your time, I want to ask if I can keep you just a little bit.
Sure.
Because I've got some questions coming in from people who are listening, and I wanted to be sure and ask. Person in the professional world of sports is asking about life after sports. For example, if you've put all this energy, maybe since you were, itty bitty into a sport, and then all of a sudden college is done and maybe you're not playing that sport anymore. What's the mindset there? How do you keep people from being sad or depressed or some people might be relieved. I don't know, but I could see there being a gap to maybe fill with even just like if you're part of a team and then you're not suddenly. How do you guys deal with that?
We do. And the NCAA's sort of taken the lead. I think we often, from a resource management perspective, sort of identify our priorities. But we do strategically intend to tackle sort of that after the game. What, to your point, the NCAA does have programming around after the game. And it is whether it's connecting, networking, we have a vision of, whether you played baseball at New Haven or you played softball at St. Anselm College, you were an any 10 student athlete. How do we connect and network and create opportunities for or even softball from a bunch of different schools? When you're all alums in the same city, you're not alums of the same school. How can we be a conduit to connect people? Because I think so much of that team environment was around connection and community. And so I think there's space there that goes beyond your college affinity. And I think we need to explore that, and we intend to. We also want to create programming, and I'll put a plug in, that one of the ways that we feel we can keep people connected to the sport is to encourage them to consider officiating. There's an incredible shortage of officials, and you and I both know as parents of children who play youth sports that officiating's maybe not something that you'd be like, I would never want to officiate and listen to the abuse that they take. But it's incredibly critical. I mean, we're asked to move games. We're asked to change times. We're asked to not have games on certain days because there's no officials. And so we have to culturally address why people are losing, why states are losing thousands of officials in the high school and youth ranks that are really the pool. And so we intend to kick off some very specific programming talking to graduating seniors to consider, staying connected to their sport through that type of vocation. It can be additional income. It can be a way to stay connected. But again, I think part of the holistic development of people is, the connections they make. And if you somehow feel that you're alone, if your sport made you feel those connections, then, despite the fact your playing career is over, there's ways to stay involved.
Yeah. Like, you know, it could even be somebody who doesn't get drafted or whatever. I mean, there's just so much that goes on when that moment is over. I mean, I just had one graduate from college from a different school, and we've got that going on. It's like, what do I do?
Volunteer coach in your town. My son plays high school football, and two young, recently graduated college student athletes were, participated with the program last year, and they really looked up to those guys, and it was a way to, it was a way to stay connected. So I think there's so many avenues, and we have to be prepared to provide those resources to our institutions to make sure as they're graduating, what those can be. And so, to the extent that a conference can have that impact, we certainly want to try.
Yeah, I know somebody in a position of hiring who looks for student athletes because of their discipline.
Yeah.
I mean, looks
it's
for
it. It's crazy.
Like,
I don't remember the exact percentage, but a really high percentage of C-suite women, former college student athletes. I mean, just the teammate mentality, the team approach, the discipline, the structure, all those things make for great leaders, no matter the field you choose.
Yeah. The last question is about stress and realizing that, oh boy, are these folks that play sports and student athletes high achieving mindset, high achieving physical, high achieving. Do you have tips to manage stress? Like even in your own life, I can't even imagine how much responsibility is piled on you.
I think I'm still in
you
the,
do yoga, Julie.
I should.
The kid on Northeast Penn who does yoga for the team. Love it.
Yeah, I should. I think that's probably one aspect I try and do. I found myself this spring maybe more than any other stressed, and I was like, I didn't know who I was in this, stressful, that moment. And I was like, I have to do better. And so I'm still sort of in that receiving end. I can't imagine what it's like, the pressure points of succeeding and attending class and succeeding at, in these. And I look at, the student athletes that we honor, every year in all of our sports, and I'm like, gosh, how do they do it? Because I can't take
that.
Like,
how do you do that?
Right?
Mind-boggling.
Yeah. How
do
you maintain that 3-7? And you went to all your labs, and oh by the way, you were this phenomenal contributor to your team, and you mattered to them, and you were a good teammate, and you gave up your time in the community. And I think, boy, so I haven't figured that out. I think it's important that we all recognize that the need to sort of take step back and take some time. Whether that's for us, our downtime is in the summer, and I think we provide our staff and our schools provide their staffs with the opportunity to recharge and get your energy level up and no, I mean, you don't get into this profession thinking that this is a 9-to-5 job, right? And in conference office life, there's no home games, everything's on the road. And so I think you just know that you do it because you love it. And, you find those things in your life that are going to provide that balance that, if there's a morning where you just need to say, I'm going to do this, then I'm always going to be supportive of that because I think it makes us, we come to the table better in a better mindset. And so, I think it's important to make sure that you find the working environment that's supportive of that. But in athletics, it's a competitive environment. It's highly charged. It's, people are coaching their profession for wins and losses, and they're depending on 18 to 22 year olds to do that for them.
teenagers.
Yeah, they're teenagers.
Like, and you're 17-year-old. Here you go.
Yeah. And your professional life depends on their performance. I mean, that's
I'm glad you're
stressful.
Cool about it.
And
it's very, yeah.
Yeah.
So. And the kids themselves, and I'm sorry if I'm calling you kids, people, but the student athletes themselves, I just wonder sometimes if they just pause and really understand how amazing they already are, no matter what happens. I sometimes wonder that because I see a lot of beating up on themselves sometimes, like, oh, I missed that field goal,
yeah,
or oh, I missed, you know, whatever.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're already amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, and that's why, from a social media perspective, you know, it never fails to amaze me the number of people that get on student athletes that, you know, for a missed base hit or a, you know, failed,
yeah,
to advance the runner, or, you know, missed, you know, whatever, direct kick, you know, it's crazy. And so social media is on the one side, you know, are one of our best tools, and at the other end, it can be the absolute worst thing we have available to people. And so I think, I do think for the most part, you know, our student athletes have grown, mm-hmm, up in such a sort of noisy environment of, they've always known social media. They've always had a phone connected to their hand. They manage it, I think, better than we do.
Yeah.
And so I do think that they multitask better. I don't always would like to admit this to my kids, but I think they are capable of multitasking in ways that we can't, because that just wasn't how we were programmed,
yep,
at a young age.
Kids, you didn't hear that.
But,
I agree.
Right?
Yeah. No,
so
I completely agree.
Interesting. Yeah.
I'm going to need therapy when the last one goes to college here. The youngest,
right,
is heading to college, and I'm like, oh, no.
Do
you have a therapy session for that, Julie? All right.
Lots of road trips I sent, right?
Oh, it sure is, yeah. RIT. It's a little far away from Maine, but it'll be okay. He's got it going on.
Yeah. I love Maine.
Thank you. Oh, I do too.
I lived in Orno for 4 years. I don't know if you our office was there for
that.
4 years.
When you said that, I was like, oh, you know Maine. I'm not from here.
Yeah.
We're from California and Iowa and Minnesota and New Jersey and all sorts,
yeah,
of different places we've lived, but we lived here for 15 years. I just love it. Julie, thank you. I know I kept
of course.
You, but I hope you all enjoyed listening to Julie and all of her wisdom and great sense of humor. And you do have a great sense of humor, by the way. And
what I
want to do is direct people to the Northeast 10, like 10, .org, and there's more information there. And then I really like that website because it's got all of the different information about all of the different sports and all of the different schools all in one spot. Pretty neat.
Yeah. Go to your go-to source.
Yeah, exactly. And all the I also like the fact that you really recognize the academic achievers and things like that. So it's not just sports, it's everything on there. And it's pretty great.
Yeah.
Pretty great website. Really easy to navigate.
Thank you.
So if you all are looking for a website to look at today while it's raining, northeast10.org. And Julie, is there anything that we didn't cover in the hour and a half
I have really appreciated this opportunity. It's felt like we're old friends, and this is great, and hopefully we can connect in real life as well.
Oh yeah, it'd be a blast. Julie, thank you. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I know I've kept you today, but I appreciate it. And as we always say on Best Ever You, I hate closing shows. I'm sorry, but I do. But what I love is all of you guys, because as you know, Best Ever You, its website, the book Percolate, the radio show here, it's all grassroots. There's no marketing money behind us at all. So all of those millions of downloads that we have on this radio show, that's all you guys. And that's all you embracing our guests when they're here. And as you know, we love our guests because they're unique, they're wise, they're bold, they're brave, they're amazing. And they pave the way for us to do more and more cool things in our own lives and give us the wisdom that we, you know, sometimes we have a guest on and they fill in a little gap that we, you know, we're like, oh, I'm glad I heard that. Like today I heard... inclusion and diversity of thought are what's needed at the table, because I've been really thinking about leadership lately. So, Julie, I'm going to quote you if that's okay.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah. And thank you. All right, Julie, thank you so much. And everybody
thank
have
you.
A great night. All right. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.